Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Atalanta Pod, a season 5, episode 9. It's me, Dan, from Atalanta Vegas. Sorry, listeners, that we missed last week. I was on vacation, and Nick deserved a vacation from me. But don't worry, we will make it up for you this week for sure. Before we introduce our special guest here in a moment, Nick, you got a week off. How you doing?
Got a week off, but technically I was on vacation a little bit too,
Okay,
so I didn't
good.
even get to watch that Lazio game. So by my standards, we're still undefeated because that game never happened in my mind. So I'm doing well because of that.
Fantastic. And for those of you listeners who didn't see what was going on Twitter, I was actually on a plane from the East Coast back to Las Vegas to watch the Lazio match. And the time that we kick off against Napoli on Saturday, I will be on a plane back to Philadelphia. So I am going to be so let's we'll see what happens there. Exactly at kickoff, my plane takes off. So hopefully there's internet. That's good. Nothing like paying $9 for internet. We need free internet, right, Nick?
We do
We need
back
free
to the last
internet.
pod, right? That's our shtick now.
But the aforementioned big match that's coming up on Saturday against Napoli. Listen, folks, this is so far, every week we say this seems like the biggest match of Atalanta's season, but this in fact is the biggest match of Atalanta's season. And we are so fortunate to have with us one of our favorite Neapolitan supporters of the Partenope, Joe Fischetti from the Forza Napoli pod is with us. We're going to start off the show with him talking about Napoli. Joe, thanks so much for coming on the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing well despite losing our first match of the season yesterday. We're recording on Wednesday, but no, it's a great pleasure to be on with you guys. Likewise, my two favorite Atalantini. So, this is going to probably be the friendliest podcast for considering we're going to be playing against each other. Maybe it's better we're speaking before the match instead of after, but I'm honored to be on the show with you guys.
Well, we're so
Yep,
happy to
thanks for
have
stopping
you.
by, Joe, for
Oh,
sure.
man. So, my first question for you, Joe, is if I'd have told you at the beginning of the season that on match day 12, we would be playing each other and Napoli would be in first and Atalanta would be in second, what would you have thought? Would you have asked me what I was smoking and where you could get some? Or would you have thought, that's a possibility?
No, absolutely. I would be asking. Maybe not so much where you'd get it, because up here in Toronto, it's pretty accessible.
Of course.
But definitely not what I was expecting in terms of a top two, maybe even top five, I guess you can say, because Roma and Lazio are in there as well. Everyone was thinking, okay, this is going to be the return of the bigger, I guess you could say, northern clubs, Inter, Milan, Juve, with Allegri coming back. Obviously, that hasn't gone as planned. Atalanta, always it's a tough one. Obviously, you guys know the club way more than I do, but you can never rule them out. And one thing I think Atalanta has going for it this season is the fact that you're not playing in European Cup competition,
Sure,
so
yeah.
you get to rest a little bit more. But so many questions like Napoli around the squad and what's going to happen with some of the guys like Duvan and Luis Muriel, who have been around for a while but starting to get up there in age. But obviously, and we'll get into it later, Gasperini has adapted and has the team playing well. In Napoli's case, it was the much talked about departure of so many key players in past seasons. Insigne going first, you had Koulibaly, Fabian, Mertens. Even if Mertens didn't play as much, he was such a symbol of the city. Ospina in goal, which was probably the biggest concern for all Napoli fans because Meret had lost his confidence, and there was a lot of rumors about potentially bringing in someone like Kepa, which never happened. So yeah, to be sitting top of the table, to still be undefeated in Serie A, at least to finish top of our group in the Champions League, and what was a very difficult group with Ajax and of course Liverpool, definitely not what I was expecting at the start of this season.
Yeah, it's been unbelievable for both squads. And Nick, my question for you is, who is more surprising to you, Napoli or Atalanta right now?
That's tough because I'll say Napoli, and not from the fact that I'm surprised they're in first, but I just think the way you guys have dominated the league so far. Football Reference is down, so I can't read off some of
Oh
the
no, Nick can't get
statistics
his stats.
I would like to read right now, unfortunately. But literally, in every category, with oh, it's back. Good. like plus 21 goal differential, expected goal differential of 15. It's like just insane numbers. And as you mentioned, you basically lost the spine of your team. With you can argue that Ospina, your starting goalkeeper, Koulibaly, the best defender in Italy, maybe, and Fabian Ruiz, and of course Mertens as well. Like all these guys left, and you guys haven't missed a beat. And I think just from where you guys are on the table versus the personnel you lost, even though it may not be surprising here in first, the way you've dominated so far is more surprising, I think. Because Atalanta's still kind of, they're in second, but Milan's a point back, Roma's 2 points back and stuff. So there's teams within spitting distance, and maybe just some minor things that gone either way could have adjusted those standings between where we were and now.
Yep. And I want to talk about the players that left, and especially the players that replaced them in a little bit. But I do want to point out something that I thought was very surprising, and that Atalanta right now, for a long time, had the best defense, of course, in the league, but now have the second best defense, and actually a better defense than Napoli. But usually it's Atalanta who really goes out and finds these gems, Joe. So your replacements, for all the money that you got, especially from Koulibaly, going to the Premier League, it's crazy to think of what you spent and what you got. Of course, we can talk about Kvara, the guy who is actually single-handedly teaching people how to pronounce Georgian last names across the world. And now you have an entire country of Napoli fans, which is amazing. But even guys like Min-jae Kim, unbelievable value that you got for the South Korean defender. You guys got Tanguy Ndombele. And then of course the forwards in Giovanni Simeone and Raspadori. Right? Yep. I mean, Osimhen was gone for how long, and you guys were killing it while he was gone, and then he came back with a vengeance in the last couple of games. So, Joe, I mean, how unexpected is the fact that right away these guys are making such an impact on the team? I mean, is Kvara making Napoli fans be like Insigne who at this point, you know? So how did this happen, and where does the credit fall for all these new guys being integrated so quickly and making such a huge difference?
Yeah, so I mean, if we start with Kvara, I mean, definitely as much as everyone loves Insigne and what he meant to the club being mm-hmm. born in Napoli, I think everyone's quickly forgotten about him. Maybe not me so much because I live in Toronto, so he still plays for my sort of other team. But, I mean, what he is doing for his age, that's probably been the biggest surprise. As highly rated as he was, and you can say probably the same thing for Kim Min-jae, you never know with a player that's coming from another league, let alone a lower-ranked league like from Georgia, even Russia, where he played before he went to Georgia. Same thing with Kim coming from Turkey. So those were the biggest surprises. But if we have to, you know, give one individual credit, I think we have to give it to our sporting director, Cristiano Giuntoli, for and his team, of course, of scouts and player personnel for being able to identify these gems. I mean, Kvara was one that I think Napoli took advantage of the circumstances, I guess you can say, which almost mm-hmm. feels like a bit of a ugly thing to think about, but the only reason why Napoli were able to get him in the first place was because of the war with Russia and Ukraine. Mm-hmm. The players in Russia were given the opportunity to return to their home countries, or to at least from some of their clubs got the permission to leave. So that's how Kvara ended up back at Dinamo Batumi in Georgia, and Napoli jumped at the opportunity. You know, he was linked to other clubs, big clubs. Juve were looking at him at one point. So it was a little bit of fortune, good timing, and smart planning there. And then, you know, at all these positions, I think what Napoli did really well was, and you know, you look at teams like Chelsea, for example, in the Premier League, is they got players that fit the system that Spalletti wants to play, mm-hmm. as opposed to just bringing in big names, for example. So a guy like Matias Oliveira, who mm-hmm. plays at left back, he's splitting duties with Mario Rui, but that's actually made both of them better, because now with all the games that Napoli are playing, and because of the World Cup, everything's even more compressed, each of them are playing once a week, which is a good amount of time, and it's keeping them healthy and fit, and that healthy competition is improving both of their play. And, you know, the same thing applies at right wing, though we've already had Politano and Lozano for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have, you know, Tanguy Ndombele has been sort of the slowest to adapt, I guess you can say, but sure. He's slowly starting to play a more prominent role. We'll see if he can play well enough to convince the club to redeem him. His option is pretty high. I think it's 30 million euros.
Okay.
And then you mentioned, you know, the backup strikers. Again, as much as we don't want to think about Mertens leaving and how much he meant, I think you have to say that Raspadori, maybe because of his age and because of his flexibility in terms of the positions he can play, has probably been an upgrade. Again, yeah. that one I hesitate to say, because when Mertens played, he did score, but Spalletti just never played him enough. And then Simeone has just been clearly an upgrade over Petagna as a backup striker. And you know, maybe the biggest, what's been most impressive, I think, is that all the players that have departed, there were really heavy expectations from the fans on these players. Mm-hmm. And I think that weighs on these players mentally. Whereas the guys coming in, Ostergaard, another one, are all guys that are coming in with zero expectations. The fan base going into the season, going back to the first question, was thinking, we're probably going to finish somewhere between fourth and sixth, and our goal is to qualify for the Champions League.
Yep.
So when you take all those expectations off of the shoulders of these players, I think they're able to play a lot more freely, and they're all young and energetic and eager to prove themselves. So far, it's been working out really well. But going back to the question, I think Cristiano Giuntoli is the first guy that gets the credit.
Yeah. I mean, in watching Napoli play, Nick, and even just watching them destroy in Europe, and it's a shame that, you know, you lost yesterday to lose your invincible or unbeaten streak in both competitions. They're a joy to watch. Napoli's a joy to watch. And Nick, I think that you and I, when looking at this match, I don't have too many expectations for us other than let's not get blown out. Nick, is that me underselling Atalanta right now?
No, I don't think so, because Napoli would be the favorites against pretty much anybody they're going up against right now, right? Even, well, being at home is a detriment to us as it seems to be sometimes. So we can't even say, oh, we'll be at home. We have that to our advantage. It tends to not go that way oftentimes with us. But I think but the goal is to just try to keep it competitive as we can all the time. And it'll be interesting to see how Atalanta lines up, because we've kind of come out of our shell a little bit, but with pressing and trying to get up the pitch more. Does Gasperini try to do that this time around with a much more potent offense than Empoli has? I don't know.
Yeah.
Potentially not, but we'll see.
There's the thought that goes in my head before we go into more details about this upcoming match, is that both Napoli and Atalanta actually played really well last season in the beginning and kind of had some drop-offs. Atalanta's was an epic drop-off. And Napoli, of course, how many games unbeaten did they go in Serie A, Joe? I can't remember. Was it like 17 or something like that?
No, it wasn't that long. I want to say something like 12.
Oh, 12,
maybe.
Okay.
And I think it was maybe 8 or 10 straight wins to start the season until Roma tied us.
Yep. And so there was a little bit of a drop-off for both of the clubs in the second half. Atalanta at this point has, I think, +6 to what we did at this time last year. And we ended the first half of the season with our highest points total ever, which was 38 points. I'm just going to ask you, Joe, first, and then I'm going to throw it over to you, Nick. Joe, do you think that there's going to be that potential possibility post World Cup of, is this going to be similar to last year, or is this Napoli team just different?
So that's the biggest fear, I would say, amongst the Napoli fans. What does this World Cup break entail, and what will happen after? But I feel like it's different than in previous seasons. Whereas in previous seasons, the concern was that we happen to have this lull. We seem to drop form in around December, January, and we lose a couple matches to teams that we shouldn't lose to, like Empoli or Spezia. And then that's enough to cost us the season, combined with maybe a couple other poor results, which, I mean, every team is going to have a bad game here and there.
Sure.
This season, it's a little bit different, because it's, the concern is more like that the World Cup break is going to kill our momentum.
Yeah.
And even though we're probably right around the same point total that we were at this time last season, there's a very different feel around Napoli, and I think a lot of that comes from the depth that the squad now has.
Sure.
Losing Osimhen would have been devastating last season, but as you mentioned, this season Raspadori and Simeone stepped right in and scored the goals and got the points that we needed them to get. So I think the bigger concern is, will we be able to pick up and resume where we left off after the World Cup? On the flip side, you can say, the World Cup is an opportunity to rest, to recharge and come back stronger. And hopefully Spalletti can get past that hump of, the struggles in the winter.
And most of your core is from countries that aren't even going to be participating in the World Cup, which I think helps too with Kavara, Osimhen.
Yeah.
Osimhen, I think, is one you want to say the most healthy, who can just pick up a rogue injury doing whatever. So maybe that is valuable.
Yeah, the funny thing, though, is that as Napoli are playing well, there's a risk that more players are going to get called up. So, there are guys that we know for sure will be there, Kim Min-jae, Lozano, Zielinski. But now there's talks about Mario Rui potentially being called up to Portugal. There's talks about Simeone maybe being the replacement for Dybala with Argentina. So, but at the same time, if you look at the teams or the countries that these players play for, none of them are really expected to make deep runs in the World Cup, so they might still get a decent break. Argentina is the one that seems like the biggest favorite if Simeone gets called up, but even then, who knows if he'll play a whole lot, because you still have Messi and Lautaro and all these other guys there. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yep, absolutely. And Nick, it's a different feeling around our club this year too, but maybe for different reasons. What do you see as is are we going to see another drop off like we did last season?
This team feels different, right?
Yeah,
I think a little bit, especially because it just feels like the stride, like we're doing well, but we haven't really hit a stride yet, because yeah. Zapata has not scored. Muriel scored one goal from a penalty. So guys we would have really banked on to be the focal point of the offense have, I think, at least both of those two guys will get a hot streak at some point. I think that could help carry us over some rough patches, hopefully. And yeah, I think this squad just has a different feel to it this time around. Maybe we won't be as successful as we're doing right now, but it's not like we're going to get one win out of 10 or whatever it was at the end of last year or something like that, hopefully.
So can I just ask you guys about that quickly? Because I'm curious to know, flipping the script a little bit, what your thoughts are on Atalanta season so far, because the general feel, at least outside of the club, is almost like Atalanta are finding a way to get results. And there's two ways you can look at that, right? Is it that could be looked at as a positive, that maybe the struggle part of the season happened at the beginning and you're still getting the results, and then once you kick into gear and find form, you're just going to blow away the competition? Or is the feeling that, the club is kind of rebuilding, playing a little different shape, so it's taking time to adapt to that? What is the feeling amongst Atalantini in terms of your form?
You want to
I'll go with that.
Yeah, go ahead.
And if you're one of Joe's normal listeners and you're over here, welcome. To any Napolitani, here's a little bit about what's going on in my head as an Atalanta fan, right? So, Nick, you know this about me and how I've been feeling. I had no idea what to make of this season. We come out and we had a terrible season last season. I mean, I hate to say terrible, but it wasn't the same as the past, right?
Underwhelming,
especially the way we ended with a whimper, which was really, really sad, the way that we saw it out. So there was a lot of, let's say, negativity, but we're not Napoli, we're not Inter, we're not Roma, we're not Lazio. We're Atalanta, for goodness sakes, We have no Scudetto, we have one Coppa Italia, and every year it's like, we need 40 points so we could stay up, right? I mean, we try to tell ourselves that we're a provincial team, but 3 years in a row of ending up in third place and 5 minutes away from a Champions League semifinals 2 years ago, that we have to feel disappointed, because I don't care who you talk to, even though we support a smaller club, who doesn't like winning, right? I mean, we liked winning. We got used to it, right? And we also got used to sticking it to those people who every single season said we were going to drop off. So it felt like kind of crap when we eventually did, right? Because in the beginning, We were everybody's favorite second team. Look at these guys. Look at this, how they're playing. They're like carrying the banner for the new Serie A, right? And then after a couple seasons of us beating up on the bigger teams, everybody starts to get a little bit annoyed with us, right? And we kind of relish that to a certain extent, but we want people to like us. I don't know, Nick. I mean, I know that our fans are famous for saying, you know, everybody hates us and we don't care. But maybe in the stadium that's true, but that's not the case here in this community. I want people to like us. I love my club. Yeah. I want people to love my club. So when we start out the season in this really low block, right, and we're getting results, we're not getting scored on, it was really hard to make, because there was that game against Hellas Verona, Nick, where we won 1-0 from a Town Coop Miners goal, when in the first half we could not string two passes together. Mm-hmm. You know, and yeah, it was against Hellas Verona, who weren't as bad back then when we were playing them as they seem to be right now. Maybe it was just foreshadowing for the future, but it was disgusting. We were all, for us, you know, we just want to play well. And so we were used to a certain style. And then at the beginning, that last season, we started hoofing it up to poor Duvan, and he was just running after it. We got some guys in the offseason, guys like Ademola Lookman, Brandon Soppy, who had a little bit more pace. So we started to see that that Gasperini seemed to be dropping back a little bit, you know, trying to hit quicker on the counter. We don't have the same type of players that we used to in the past. There's no creativity kind of in the squad to a certain extent. You know, Muriel came off a bad season. Duvan was not good in the second half of the season. So it was really just a mystery how we were getting these results. I mean, Nick, when we beat Roma 1-0, and of course, Tammy Abraham missed like 14 shots as he's been doing lately this year. Nick's tweet was the best. It was take the points and run. You know, just take the points and run. And it's gotten better, though, Nick, over the past few games. There seems to be a little bit more of an identity going forward. But it seems like Gasp doesn't like playing the way that he played in the beginning of the season, even though we got all those points, right? Yeah. He wants to play attacking football. So I don't know, Nick, what else do you have to add to that? Because it is very confusing to watch for a Atalantino who watches week in and week out. I can't imagine what it's like for somebody who's used to watching them once or twice a year when they play against their own team. And they're like, what is this Atalanta team doing? This is not the Atalanta team I remember.
Yeah, I agree. And I think and I think the fact that the Roma match was such an aberration, and so lucky that we were able to come up with not just any points, but 3 points. I think that's probably ingrained in lots of people's minds more so. And it's not really a full embodiment of what the season's been about for Atalanta.
That's true.
Because it has been. It's been different, and while we might not be that high-flying offense that is just constantly trying to breathe down teams' necks, win the ball back immediately, games have always really been under control still. They've been under control. They've been ugly, but it's like Atalanta had their pulse on the match and was able to rein everyone in. We've seen the offense start to open up recently, with Lazio being the exception, where we just ran out of steam a little bit there. And I think maybe it's a little bit Gasperini saw what happened last season, realized that it doesn't matter how much you could just be a ball dominant team, rip off so many shots, win balls back. If you can't finish it, and if there's too much clog space, it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. So I think that kind of turned over to this year. We saw more open games that, okay, we're going to play back, create this space. And maybe that's something we'll get to later, Joe, because I know Spalletti said something really interesting about tactics are out the window now, and it's all about finding space.
Yeah.
Gasperini maybe is trying to do a little bit of that. And a corollary to that a little bit is, I think, of what we're seeing with Fiorentina this year, playing a really kind of a similar style to what Gasperini has really done. And Italiano's team is just running into that same brick wall. Like, it doesn't matter if they have 65% possession and are able to just like win balls back immediately. They don't have guys who can finish, which is what kind of happened to Atalanta last year. And I think they're seeing the same thing that happened to us, even though you'd be saying they should be winning these games because of everything that they did process-wise to get there, but that final ball. So I think to turn that around, I think we're hopefully blending this into Atalanta, seeing that approach where, okay, we're going to try to open up more space. That's why we're playing so far back, et cetera. But these last couple of games against teams we should be beating, like Sassuolo, Empoli, even Udinese, which we really shouldn't have beat, but that was a better offensive match, I think. we're starting to see those two things come together with that more different interpretation of the space, but adding that more offensive crispness that we've been used to. I think now that we have these new guys worked into the system a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be really interesting, Joe, going into this match on Saturday. I don't know. Do you have more background questions for us, or do you want to jump into what we're seeing?
Why don't we talk about that question about tactics? Because I think that's really interesting. And of course, Nick is like the tactics guru. But the comment that Spalletti made, which is what I titled my last episode on the podcast, is around playing in not having positions anymore, just playing in space. And that's essentially what this Napoli team does. And they can only do it because they're so well drilled, where everyone has such good chemistry with each other that their movements, each individual's movements, are based on the movements of the players around them. So they're going into spaces. And it's also a function of being able to play the ball quickly on and off the ball quickly. So quick one-touch passes. And it has a similar feel to Sadi Ball when Sadi was at Napoli, and the ability to just play out of the back with quick passes. Stanislav Lobotka is a really, really important part of that in the Regista, where, you know, there are times where we seem to be cornered and we play a pass to him, and because of his low center of gravity, he makes a quick turn, he lets the ball roll past him or whatever and passes out of it. So that's really important. But I also find it interesting that you mentioned Atalanta playing a bit lower than you're accustomed to, at least certainly in previous seasons. Because that's what Napoli has struggled against the most this season. It's the teams that we've played against that have sat back in the low block, which is typically the teams nearer to the bottom of the table because their objective is just to try to get a point out of the match. Those are the teams we've struggled to break down. And I think this is also the reason why Napoli have had so much success in the Champions League, because there you're typically playing against teams that are playing their game and they're trying to take it to you. They have their own identities. And so they might be a Liverpool that presses high, or an Ajax for that matter, who presses high. What that does is it gives us the space to play through them with quick passes. And once we get behind, whether it's through the midfield or with a ball over the top to someone like Osimhen that has such quick pace, that creates problems for our opposition. Whereas when the opponent is sitting back in a low block, it's a bit more difficult, but so far we've managed to find a way. And part of that goes back to the previous discussion about those guys that are coming off the bench, a Simeone or a Raspadori, who are all kind of very different. We have three very different strikers that can give you very different looks. And that's been allowed us to get results, whether it's, you know, Raspadori scoring late against Spezia or Simeone scoring late against Milan. We found a way to get out of these matches, but I'm maybe not expecting this match to be as one-sided as you guys might be, because I mean, these are two very smart tacticians that are going up against each other. And I'm sure Gasperini will have a game plan that will make Napoli's lives pretty difficult.
Yeah. And I, one of the comments that you made that I saw on Twitter, Joe, was about how long Spalletti left the starters in the Champions League. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I commented, it might not matter at all, but I have to say, Nick, like, in my mind, for some reason, and I think for good reason, and we can see kind of the effect that not having Ciro Immobile for Lazio actually benefited Lazio against our defense, that man-marking center back. Having a focal point like Victor Osimhen for Mary Demiral to follow around and kick around a little bit and make his life hard, I feel like Raspadori and or Gio Simeone might make life harder for the back three. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I know. I definitely know where you're coming from with it, because you don't know what Simeone, and well, I guess you should say you don't know what Victor Osimhen's going to do either. He can be a wild card sometimes, but yep. Raspadori and Simeone's games feel like they're not, Joe, you can correct me if I'm wrong, aren't like, okay, I'm the center forward, I stay in the half spaces in the middle of the pitch kind of thing. It feels like they can weave more in and out, especially from watching Raspadori with Sassuolo. He played left wing a lot of times too, so he has that skill set. But yeah, if we have to go into the game and Mara Demiral's like, okay, I'm marking Osimhen, at least that settles down, okay, this is the tactics we have to take up defensively, this is our plan. Now, doing it is a very difficult thing because nobody is as limmy or as quick as Osimhen in the league right now. He embarrassed Chris Smalling on that one goal where he was able to squeak around and get in on him. So that's a really, really difficult task to begin with. But maybe it does set the game up as a little more, what's the best way to say it? From a defensive planning perspective, it's a little more straightforward for Atalanta, maybe, knowing that Osimhen's the guy that you have to mark in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah. With that man marking tactic that we have, those center backs, the confusion that a front three maybe, or just like a striker does when he moves around, just wreaks havoc on our center backs. I think that we're going to probably see the three experienced center backs against Napoli, in Toloi and Demiral and Jimmy starting, just because it's such a big game, and they're, you never know what Napoli's going to be able to throw at you. But Joe, speaking of tactics, what do you think? Is there a difference in the way that you come out and play? Is Spalletti going to change anything? We're talking the highest goal scorers in the league right now against Atalanta, do you think?
I don't think he'll change tactically, but we're, in terms of setup, it'll be a 4-3-3. We know that. We've seen the 4-2-3-1 once or twice, but I'm not really expecting that. That could be, unless he pulls that out as a bit of a surprise tactic, but more than likely it'll be a 4-3-3. What I'm wondering is, as you mentioned, given how long Osimhen played, Cavada played, and Gisa played, who just recently returned from an injury, how many of these guys are actually going to start the match? And maybe that's a good segue to talk about starting lineups. I think our back four is probably pretty easy to figure out because, and Meret in goal, no doubt. Di Lorenzo plays every match, every 3 days. The guy is just a robot. It doesn't make any sense what his body can endure. You can probably say the same thing for Kim Min-jae, especially with Amir Rahmani hurt. Kim has to be one of the two center backs to start. One of the questions is, do we start Juan Jesus, who is more rested, or Leo Ostergaard, who looked really good against Liverpool, maybe lesser so in terms of his passing, but defensively very sound. I'm leaning more towards Juan Jesus to start there. And then at left back, I think we'll probably see Mario Rui come back into the lineup because he's fresher. In the midfield, I think we're going to see our best trio here, but I am concerned about how long you can get out of Anguissa after playing so long. So that would be Lobotka as the regista with Zielinski on the left and Anguissa on the right. And then the front three, probably Lozano to start again, like that left back situation, because Politano played midweek. You start Lozano, they're a 1A, 1B on the right wing. Cavada is another player that has shown that he's super fit. Maybe it's because he's still young. So more than likely, he's going to start on the left wing. The only alternative we have to him is Raspadori. So that may be another kind of wrench that Spalletti can throw in there, because as Nick said, he can play on the left wing. And when he plays there, he is very unpredictable. He drifts. He plays almost, I don't know if you could call it a false 10. Spalletti likes inventing positions, but, in the match that he played on the left wing, I'm trying to remember which match it was, but he played much more as a 10, at least in terms of attacking, and Mario Rui got forward and played as the left winger. But more than likely, Cavada will play there, because I believe we have Empoli midweek, and that's probably the place where you're going to rest some players. For the same reason, I think Osimhen will probably be the starter, but if not, then you do have those alternatives with Raspadori and Simeone. The interesting thing is, while I agree that Raspadori is very unpredictable in the way he plays, Simeone is your very classic traditional number nine, so that may not match up as well against Atalanta with that man marking. Raspadori would match up very well for us, because when he plays in the nine, he does tend to play more as like a false nine, or he drops really deep,
very deep,
and he pulls those center backs with him, pulls them out of position, and then that opens up the space in behind, right? So I'm very curious to see how Spalletti does this. I think there's a good chance that he sticks with his sort of preferred starting 11, if you could call it that. And then if it's still all level, or certainly if we fall behind, then he has lots of options and weapons that he can bring off the bench and give us a different look in the attack.
Yep. All things that make sense. Nick, what's your preferred starting 11? And then if there's, what will actually happen, do you think? If there's a difference. And the question is, with DiRono out, who is going to give poor Lobotka hell in this match? Because that's how we did it last time. Poor Sam Lobotka. But he's important, like you said, like making sure that he is not comfortable on the ball. He's getting knocked around. His center of gravity, I think, for us to win this game or get something out of this game, his center of gravity has to be level with the ground for most of it. We have to make it ugly. I think that's how I see it. So, Nick, who's going to make it ugly?
Tough. It's tough, right? Because that's DeRone in a nutshell right there. Although, when I get to the line, maybe there's something that could happen. But I think with DeRone now, that makes it more straightforward because we probably see similar to what we saw against Empoli. Mm-hmm. And on top, I agree with you that I think the veteran should take precedent over the youngsters. And then I agree with your back three. Well, Musso, of course, and then Toloi, Demiral, Jim City. Wing backs of Joachim Mele, left side, Hans Hattabor, right side. And then that midfield three with Pastelic and Ederson kind of flip-flopping. Is one an attacking midfielder? Is one playing central? You don't really know. But I think that's likely what we see those two guys in that Cope Miners, of course, who hasn't missed a minute yet this year. But if we're talking about how do we make Lobotka uncomfortable, maybe Scalvini steps into the defensive midfield role as well. I was trying to, I might convince myself by the end of the episode that that's a better set and we put him in over Ederson.
Well, you know what's going to happen. He'll get a yellow card in the first 5 minutes. He'll stick out a long 18-year-old leg. And he'll get a yellow card, and then he'll be playing on that the entire game.
That's what he needs to like hone himself in. He needs that danger of getting himself kicked out of the match. I don't know. But then up front, I think it's Duvan and Lookman in kind of like a 3-5-2, which I really liked because I wrote about it that it takes away standing around, which is oftentimes what can happen. Sometimes if we have like a 3-4-1-2, whoever the one is in the attacking midfield role. It's just kind of there. But if you have two guys running at you, it's easier to find the open space and create the open space. And you have your momentum going forward. And I think that can also force more defensive errors than just having somebody standing there around statically.
Yep.
So I would like to go with that. But I'm also not opposed to putting Scalvini in that midfield because we have Jim City back and don't really need as much cover in defense.
I 100% agree with you. I think it's going to be everybody who you said with the Ederson Pasalic, we'll call it the Ederson Pasalic Cope Miners midfield. But I would prefer Scalvini because one of the things that I did say is that I felt like Ederson is a little bit weak in the challenge. And I think Scalvini is, like you said, can make life hell for these skilled midfielders. I mean, you got to think about, you got Piotr Zielinski and you got Zambo Anguissa there as well. Yeah. But it's like, you know, you got to put your rough and tumble. We'll call it like like your third line in hockey in there, so you can rough up the other team. That's what we almost have to play with, you know. And I don't want to take away from any of the skill that we have, but I do respect this Napoli midfield, and I think the way that we get a result in this match is to rough them up in the midfield a little bit. You know,
it's like the way we handled Marcelo Brozovic.
Yep.
Last year in that nil-nil game that was really close to going our way. It was just pester him, make him make mistakes. And we had the three midfielders in. Granted, Breuler and DeRone are much more physical than I think the guys we have right now, but similar setup might be what we need
to pull something off. That formation is also interesting and going to be a challenge for Napoli because whether it's a 3-5-2 or I guess it can look like a 3-4-1-2, you know, when Pasalic gets forward. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, you're overloading the midfield a little bit and clogging it up. And that's Napoli's strength. So you, again, going back to the discussion about space, more bodies in a smaller space means less space per person. So that's going to be tricky for Napoli as well. I'm curious to know what you thoughts on some of the.
Sorry, we lost you there for a second, Joe. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. You guys, your faces froze on me. So I'll pick it up. I'm curious to know what you guys think of some of the youngsters. Like you mentioned Scalvini, you mentioned Lookman. You know, Lookman is a similar case. Okay, obviously not getting the same attention that Cavada is getting necessarily, but a relatively unknown player coming into the league and seems to be doing really well. Like, what are your thoughts on them? And then there's other guys that maybe are playing a bit less, but like Okoli, Soppy, Hoyland, maybe more so at the beginning of the season. How are you feeling about this kind of younger set of players that have come in?
Nick, you want to take this?
Yeah, I'll go first. And then obviously Lookman's been the revelation so far for the team. Yep. He's shown to be really versatile, especially in this last game against Empoli, where he was asked to go on the left, play left wing, left attack, midfield, or whatever you want to call it, and be equally as good as he had recently been on the right side. So he's been the star of the new signings we brought in for sure this year. The only problem is the fact that he's British. He's having a great year. It feels like with every goal he scores, the price tag just goes up that some a Crystal Palace or like a West Ham is going to want to go in and get him. Unfortunately, that's just, I hope not, but
no,
that's the way it happens with English guys. Sometimes
it doesn't help that he gets booked for doing his celebration.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I would want to leave Italy too, morons.
But I think with the other guys, Okoli's raw. Okoli and Soppy, the talent is there, mm-hmm. and can blossom into brilliant players if everything breaks right. So they have their moments of brilliance. They have their moments of what are you doing at the same time. So I think you live with that with guys that are 20 years old, obviously. And then the same with Hoyland. Hoyland's, I think he doesn't have the same kind of head scratching, what are you doing moments. I think it's a little tougher to do that as a striker sometimes when you don't have to play defense. But his engine, I've never seen a work rate on the center forward quite like his right now, and he'll make chances out of seemingly nothing, which I think is really valuable. And he just has to get a little more polish into his game, I think, to finish those off or to set teammates up to turn those half chances into goals. And I love the infusion of young blood. I think as difficult as it was to lose Remo Freuler, to potentially have Ruslan Malinovsky leave in January, not that losing Freuler allowed us to ascend to where we are right now necessarily, but I think an infusion of youth really helped this team out to just get younger and just have a fresh take on what and a new interpretation of what Gasperini wants to do instead of just the same thing we've seen for the last 5 years or so.
Yeah, I totally agree, Nick. And to me, there's two points, right? Number one, guys like Ademola Lookman and Brandon Soppy specifically, and Ederson too, if he ever gets going here. They're the players that we need to play this new style, like you had just said, Nick, like this new philosophy to hit quick. We needed pace. We got torched in the Champions League by young boys because they had pace. And it's just ridiculous. It was getting old. And every time that we would watch that happen to us with an aging team, as much as we love them, we'd be like, we need some young, fast guys. Now we got some young, fast guys. So that feels good. But for me as a half Bergamasco and you knowing that Atalanta has had this fantastic youth system that's a marketplace for youth, not just in Italy, but all over the world now. You know, it's so nice that we get guys like Scalvini, Okoli, Sortea, even a little bit Ruggeri, not as much, but we actually are getting guys who grew up at Zingonia and into the team. To me, that's one of the biggest successes of this season. And, you know, obviously I have Bergamasco blood, so a little bit of that makes me feel really, really good, even if Scalvini's from Brescia. Like, I have to keep reminding myself, don't love this guy too much, he's Bresciano. But it's really fantastic to have these young guys, but they can have some really rough patches. Sans the first year that Gasperini had, 2016, 2017, that breakout season with, you know, Conti, Spinazzola, Gagliardini, Frank Kessi, where it was almost like that game against Napoli where Gasperini was like, screw it, I'm going to put the kids on. And all of a sudden, we won like 9 games in a row and it was on, right? He never really liked working with youngsters, right? And so he always was looking for those experienced players because it worked with the style, but then to the detriment, I think, of the progression of the game. So having youngsters is really, really good for us. But I have to say, out of all those guys, I am most excited about Rasmus Hoyland. And I feel like he is the striker that we need. Are we going to be able to keep him? I don't think so. To me, he's like a baby Vlahovic with probably less of an attitude problem. You know, so it's, you know, that's a striker who I think can do great things. He's got the strength, he's got the drive. He's so young. And the fact that we paid, what was it, Nick, 16 million or so for him, or around that, from Sturm
Like
Graz?
17.
17 million on a 19-year-old. Atalanta never does that. And of course, we have a new sporting director as well in D'Amico and Lee Congerton. Probably, you know, that's how we got Ademola Lookman from Leicester / RB Leipzig. But it's a nice change. And I think that that's one of the things that in the beginning of the season, when I was looking, like, kind of just, you know, tilting my head like a curious dog watching these games, how Atalanta was playing, it made me feel better to think about this youth that was happening, because we haven't had that in years. And you know, whenever we get, because we were such a selling team, whenever we got good players in Zingonia, boom, Amad Diallo, Man United, 45 million, never even plays at Rangers. That was a good deal. But Kulusevski out, you know, like all these guys. So it's really nice to see that happen.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of something everyone, Serie A fans in general, are enjoying seeing, because we know that Serie A managers historically have shied away from playing young talent, and we're finally slowly starting to see it. You know, in Napoli's case, it's lesser so from the development side. We have a couple kids that we'll see if anything pans out with them. They're kind of playing now in Serie C and Serie B, but at least in terms of recruiting, we got a lot younger in the summer. You know, you look at Roma, and their Primavera team has been playing really well, and now you're starting to see these guys like Volpato, who scored the other day, coming up and playing in the first team. So it is nice, it is refreshing. It's just, as a Serie A fan, to see that some clubs at least are starting to play the youth players. You know, the idea of how old is Scalvini, 18, 19, the fact, you know, the idea of him playing fairly regularly is just mind-boggling for me as a Serie A fan, but it's great to see.
Absolutely. All right. Are we at that point where we want to come up with predictions, Joe? Do you have a prediction for the outcome of this match? Let's hear it.
Oh man, I feel like with this is the perfect situation to get the media in Napoli all fired up after we lost to Liverpool. So I'm gonna predict a draw. I'm gonna say 1-1, which is very. I'm kind of going against the trend here, because Napoli games tend to go over the total most of the time, just on Napoli's goals alone. So, you know, a low scoring draw is kind of not a result that would be typical for Napoli season, but just from purely based on what I've heard from you guys today and the way that Atalanta play and set up, I think it's going to be a challenging fixture for Napoli. It's another road match for us where we've done well, but yeah, I'm not ex yeah, I'd be very, very happy with the win, of course, but I'm expecting a draw.
Who do you think scores?
I'm gonna give the Napoli goal to Cavada, and for Atalanta, maybe I'll go with Lookman, since we've spent a good amount of time talking about him.
Yeah, and who scores first, Napoli or Atalanta? This is a big deal for us. We've only gone behind twice in the season.
Well, yeah, that's another interesting one. Yeah, you know what? I'll go against the odds there as well and say that Napoli score first and maybe get caught on a counterattack for the equalizer. We One
Interesting.
of the things about, you know, talking about scoring a lot, and I love using Atalanta as kind of the case study for this, but teams that score often, and you guys know this well, tend to be a bit more exposed at the back and therefore concede more often. And you know, teams that protect and play very defensively or play defense first concede few goals, but because they're so focused on defending, also score a few goals. It's kind of the nature of football. So I think while Napoli might score, that's not going to mean that Napoli are going to stop playing attacking football, which also means we are going to get exposed every now and then, and it may come down to the quality of finishing, as we talked about earlier.
Nick.
I would gladly take a draw.
Take the point and run.
Take the point and run. I wish I could be more optimistic. I think it's going to be Napoli. I'm going to go 3-1. I think it'll be a close game, though, still. So I think Napoli will – I see an Osim embrace, but Osim scores. Then we peg one back with Cup Miners. You got to score in the second half again. And then with Osim, of course, again. And then it's us trying for like 30 minutes to get that second tying goal. And then you hit us on the break. And then somebody like Zielinski gets the third goal. I think it's going to be a good game, I think. And then like 89th minute, Napoli puts it away somehow like that.
Okay, so we got 1-1, 1-3, or 3-1 for Napoli from Nick. I'm going to go with 1-1 too, Joe. I'm going to go like you. I think it's going to be an ugly game. I think that both goals are going to come from defenders. I think Kim Min-jae is going to score from a set piece, maybe from a Mario Rui cross. Something like that, and our three defenders are going to look at each other and say, who had the big Korean? You know, like that's the usual. And Juan Musso is going to yell in his mask about the marking. Gasperini will throw his arms up. Napoli will go ahead, and that's going to be probably the middle of the first half. We respond right before halftime. Rafa Toloi will come through somehow, making some weird run from the back like he likes to. Probably
hit it off his shoulder. Somehow.
Yeah, hit it off of exactly. Yeah. Hit it off of his butt. In like a melee, and it will cross over the line. And then the second half is just going to be the most exciting 0-0 draw of the second half. I think it's going to be pretty open, but nobody's going to manage to score, and the game is going to end 1-1, and I will take that result and run.
Me too, gladly. Let's hope. Well, let's not bet on it.
Well, Joe, I have to say that I haven't been this up. I'm always up for a Napoli-Atalanta match, but this one seems a little bit special. For everybody involved, I think that we can all say, as supporters of the non-traditional, well, I mean, Napoli's a big club, but you know, we're a northern club. Napoli's carrying that banner for the south, along with Salernitana now, which is actually really, really nice. You know, it would be so nice. Can you imagine if the season ended in this way, us as 1-2? What a great thing for Serie A that would be. Nothing like crapping on the Inter, Juve, and Milan fans makes me feel good. What do you say with that, Joe?
Yeah, and you know, as a Napoli supporter, if Juve can stay where they are as well and play in the Conference League next year, I think we get even, you know, that might be a nice consolation prize if, say, Atalanta win the Scudetto, that, you know, we'll finish still in the top four and watch Juve not have success in Europe. But yeah, I'm also very excited about this match, very nervous about this match, but that's a good thing, right? Because that means that it's really important for both of these clubs. So I'm looking forward to it for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And what was the name of that movie on Netflix? It took place in Napoli, and the guy was like an ultra, like a Napoli ultra. Have you seen this movie, Joe? He's like an ultra in the Napoli group. It's on Netflix.
I have to look it up. I mean, half the Napoli movies, maybe more, are just called Maradona or Diego.
Yeah, no. this one is a story about a guy who is from Napoli, and he's like an ultra. And there's this one scene, and it always cracks me up because they've got that very, you know, that Neapolitan accent and dialect. And they're talking about going up to Bergamo for Festa della Dea because the Atalanta supporters invited him and his crew, and he said a couple of things that cracked me up in it. And this is crazy to watch on Netflix, that a Napoli supporter is talking about Atalanta. He says the Bergamaschi talk really weird, right? Which they do.
But it's also ironic because Napoli has a unique dialect. Yeah,
it's like we're like the Bostonians of Italy, you know, we can't say our R's or something, and the Neapolitans are like from Alabama or something like that with their southern accent. But he says also those guys are crazy, right? So I think when you're talking about two fan bases, and I'm sure that they're not like BFFs, there's never been a thing, and there's a rivalry, but I think there's a lot of respect between the two clubs right now, and we definitely have a whole lot of love and respect for you, Joe, and so we're so grateful that we could have you on, and that we could hopefully some of your listeners are listening to this preview and enjoying that as well.
Yeah, no, and I feel exactly the same way. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you guys. It always is, whether it's on your show or on my show. So thank you for having me on. It's been a lot of fun, and look forward to a good match on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. And Joe, can you tell our listeners where they can find you if they want to learn more about Napoli?
Yeah, so if you're looking for me specifically, Twitter's the easiest place, at Joe_Fischetti5. The podcast you can find on all your usual podcast platforms and all your social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, Patreon, if you want to support the show. And this year I launched a website as well. So if you want to find some written content, right now it's mostly me just hammering out content, but hopefully we'll get some more writers on soon. I get the occasional sort of guest writer, but it's ForzaNapoliPress.com. So we're sticking with the FNP kind of brand.
Nice.
Makes it easier for people to remember, but yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on and for all the support from everyone that's followed the show and the website.
100%. And so from Nick and I, thank you so much again.
Yeah, thanks so much, Joe, for coming on. Had a great time.
Yeah. So we hope to talk to you in the future. And maybe, I don't know, I didn't look at the bracket for Coppa Italia, but do we have a chance of meeting in the final?
Probably maybe in the final, yeah. Like I know Napoli is sort of most likely, I guess it would be quarterfinal match would be Roma.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know who the semi-finalist could be after that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But, you heard it here, folks. Napoli and Atalanta battling it out for the Scudetto and meeting in the Coppa Italia final. What a great season 22-23 would be.
Yep.
All right.
100%.
Thanks so much, Joe. Ciao.
Thanks, Joe.
Well, Nick, that was fun to have Joe with us to preview what is, there's no argument here, the biggest match of the season for us against a high-flying Napoli side, an enjoyable side to watch. I'm surprised. I'm surprised that you think we're going to lose that match. Usually you're pretty optimistic, more than me.
Yeah, I'm optimistic. Like, I'm cautiously optimistic. It would be tough, I think, to predict a win, right? That would just be, we'd be fooling ourselves if we thought that would happen.
I agree. Yep.
And I think it's a toss-up between a draw and not a toss-up between a draw and a loss, because there's a chance we can win, obviously. But I think it'll be, while I'm predicting a loss, it's not going to be a game like, man, we just played like crap. I think it's like it'll be a performance that you can be encouraged about, that you can go into the short week against Lecce and then enter on Sunday morning and still be encouraged about getting 6 points potentially still from the before the World Cup break comes along.
Yep. I agree. But let's quickly, because this was 2 weeks ago where we finally got our first loss against a very game Lazio that has been playing great. Even without Ciro Immobile, it was like no Ciro, no problem, until evidently they came up against Salernitana last weekend, which was a little bit of a shock. But Nick, this match, we lose 2-0. I mean, it just seemed like a bit of a letdown and an aberration. I think a lot of us had some bad feelings, and maybe we kind of realized that maybe we were jumping a little bit to conclusions after this match. My biggest takeaway, honestly, other than why the hell Lucho decided to get a second yellow card so late, so we didn't have him against Empoli, was that whole point of not having that reference striker and it was like on that Zaccagni goal, the back three just didn't pick him up, and having a mobile front three like Napoli could potentially have on Saturday is actually very hard for our defense to deal with.
Definitely. Yeah. And I'm looking, it was Felipe Anderson, Pedro.
Yep.
Zaccagni.
Yep.
Three really slick, short, fast moving guys. Maybe it's a little different, especially so. And I would like to see Osimhen play, just because I think it helps make everything a little more comfortable with what's happening on and roles and responsibilities and all that. But yeah, it's like a team, an NFL team. It's like you lose your best player and then you have to go play a wildcat to get points or something like that. Maybe it's a little something like that. And it worked well for Lazio. But even in that game, we talked about how Lazio, sorry, Pablo's just right here.
Hey, we always have room for Pablo.
Always have room for Pablo. The podcast. And he has something in his mouth, of course, right? pops. But sorry for that little interlude there. But what was I saying?
You were talking about Lazio.
Yeah, even this game, expected goals were the same. Yeah. 0.9 for Lazio, 0.8 for us. And I didn't watch the game, so I really can't give too much commentary about what happened. But it goes back to this point where of Lazio just being clinical, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like they take not too many good chances this game. It seems like I can turn it into to two goals, and we take similar amount of chances and can't turn it into a goal. So I think that's probably what was the difference maker in this one at the end.
Yeah. And it was definitely to like the skill, I think, of Felipe Anderson on that second goal, because we being behind, you know, and this was only the second time we had gone behind, and we reacted well against the Swallow going behind, but we pushed forward and we were trying to go for it a little bit. I want to say that, you know, it wasn't a terrible, terrible performance. I've seen worse performances from us this year from our midfield, but yeah, it just felt like we weren't up for this one. So
yeah,
it was really, really odd. I'm not surprised that we lost. I honestly think that Chiro being out was a detriment to us, and I think that's something that Gasperini has to look at. What happens if you don't have a focal point striker that somebody like Mario Demiral can cover, and you got these three little guys? I mean, they're not. I mean, yeah, we know Pedro's little. Zakanyi's not tiny, but he's quick. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yep.
And Felipe Anderson's a bag of tricks, and he's just really come through this year. So I think we were up against it. I think that not having Ciro Mobile actually helped. And really, you know, Darun and Cope Miners in the midfield, from what I was seeing, they weren't able to shut down SMS.
And he
wouldn't say that he was like, it's so funny with a world-class player like Sergei Milinkovic-Savic. It's like, sometimes you just don't even notice that he's dominating. And, you know, it's not like he put in, he was putting these amazing balls through all the time, but it's just the presence. And I felt like in the past, Remo Freuler was really good at getting at him. And I think we missed somebody like that in this match.
Yep.
But that was a 2-0 loss. I watched it on a plane. You didn't get to watch it. I don't know. I don't have much else to say, but it was, how many games was that? That was 10 games.
10 game unbeaten streak.
10 game unbeaten streak.
No one would have picked that at the beginning of the year.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And granted, you know, football is a funny match. Like I said earlier, of course, then last week they lose 1-3 at home to Salernitana.
Crazy.
Which is really, really crazy. So who knows? Who knows what can happen in any match? But the most recent match at the weekend, we won. We came back really, really well against Empoli. Kind of a, I would say, a comprehensive 2-0 victory, Nick. And I'm going to start like we normally do with the starting lineup. And we saw Juan Musso back in goal for the first time in mask. And a back three of Toloi, Demiral, and Scalvini. Good to have Rafa Toloi back as captain. And kind of like you said, when we were talking to Joe earlier, we had kind of a five midfield as opposed to like a four. So Mele and Hotabur on the wings, which seems to be, you know, kind of what's being the norm here. And then we had Pasalic, Ederson, and Cope Miners. Seemed like Pasalic was lining up a little bit behind, and Ederson was a little bit more forward. And the front two of Lookman and Hoyland, obviously Duvan just coming back from injury, and Lucho being suspended for the match. No Darun for an injury. Nick, what did you think of this starting 11?
I was trying to remember if Hoyland was a surprise, I think. I'm trying to think if anything was different than over the top. Maybe I had Jim Citzy in there, I'm not sure. But I think this is, in retrospect, besides the Zapata, maybe he's not fully fit yet. You don't want to have him playing 90 minutes, and that's why Hoyland starts. But I think it's what you expect to see, especially with Luis Muriel suspended. And I like it. I really do. Like as much crap as we've given Hans Hattabor over the last 18 months, it feels like he's not gonna, what's the best way to say it? He's not gonna win you a game. He's definitely not gonna lose it for you now, I think. Mm-hmm. So I'm really content with that, with the way the wingbacks have formed out. I think Mela's coming into some good form. Mm-hmm. He showed it in this game again, and Hattabor was good. Nick, and of course, he scored the goal.
In this match, he had two outside of the foot crosses. I have to tell you, two. I count those. So nice. The more outside of the foot crosses that Mela puts in, the more confident he's feeling. I'm telling you right now.
You know what? That's interesting. That's an interesting way to think about it. And you're probably right. But I liked it. And I talked about it with Joe in the podcast. I really do like having that attacking midfielder be a little further back, I think it just adds a new dimension to the team that is more focused on running rather than we're going to possess the ball in an Empoli's area. And I think it worked to good effect. Ederson had a chance really early on that he wasn't able to convert, unfortunately, due to some good saves by Vicario, of course, who saves everything, it feels like. And then even Pasalic got forward. That press he had that won the ball back, coming from a pretty deep area and then dishing it off to Lookman, who of course ran into Vicario again, the wide open shot. That I think those are things we don't really get if there's like a standard one striker in the middle, an attacker on the left, attacker on the right. Mm-hmm. It offers more flexibility and variation. If you have guys who are versatile, like Pasalic and Ederson, who can play further back, play up as well, I think it's a good use of their skill sets. Maybe we haven't seen the best of Ederson. Yeah, I thought he was the weakest of that midfield three still. But I still think there's something there. Maybe this is the role he can excel in as he gets a little more confidence in it.
Yeah, I and you and I agree that Pasalic had a fantastic match.
Yeah.
In this one. And of course, everybody, I think maybe unfairly, our collective buttholes clench when we think of Pasalic further back, right? I don't think that's the Mario Pasalic anymore. I think he's much more mature. I think that's just a little of PTSD from the past. Yep. You know,
a little confirmation bias sometimes too. If you see a play go off that, mm-hmm. everyone makes bad plays, and then we just automatically associate that with the past. Yeah.
Yep. But I think one of the things that I had talked about is Ederson seemed a little weak in 50-50s, but having those two together to help cover for each other was kind of good. And yeah, like you said, you know, the ability to press in and intercept those balls. Had Lookman just passed it, Pasalic was open, that would have been a third goal there. But how can you blame Mola for trying to get a second goal in the form that he's been? I think what actually shocked me more than Atalanta's starting 11 was the fact that none of the Atalantini were starting for Empoli. None of the X's, no Sam Lammers, no Nico Haas.
And
Cambiaghi came on in the second half, but you know, Lammers and Haas have been mainstays in the starting 11. And then they're wingbacks, no Stojanovic.
Yeah.
And no Parisi.
That was a surprise to me. Yep.
So I was just
hurt. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they were definitely on the bench. So I don't know. So I was just wondering if Zanetti was trying to play more defensively. It was just weird not to see some of these mainstays. But whatever it was, it didn't really work. We actually were able to breach Vicario twice, even though he saved that penalty from Ten Koopmeiners, which I hope it doesn't ruin his confidence, because it wasn't a great penalty of where it was. I don't know if it's because Vicario is so good. I think most goalkeepers who are diving and have the ability to lift their back leg could have probably saved that.
Yeah. But
you saw how hard he struck that, because that thing, it was like a clearance off of his shin when that happened. But can we just talk about Hans Hattemoer scoring? And I feel really, really bad, but my reaction was like, what actually just happened? How? I could see that play going wrong in so many different ways. Again, like, it was great because Scalvini was forward, Koopmeiners went forward, Lookman was there, Ederson was there. And it just so happened, Johnny on the spot, Hans Hattemoer, shifts it onto his left foot and puts it past a hapless Vicario. I feel like we've seen Hans miss that.
Oh, yeah.
Before.
Yeah.
So
good thing he was inside the 6-yard box. If he was a foot away, but further back, maybe it's sailing wide, especially that really stiff leg left foot he has.
What do you think that does for Hans's confidence, though?
I you would hope it helps it. I wonder how much confidence defensive players get from scoring a goal. Do you think they care a lot?
I feel like as a wing back, you do, especially coming from the days where you're always there. I mean, when it was him and Robin Gosens, it was just like, this is how we play, mm-hmm. right? And then he's been injured. It was a couple of seasons ago, I feel like, where he was like, I've done everything that I can at Atalanta. Oops, I'm staying, you know. And of course, Gasperini seems to love him. We can't be the only fan base, you know, the English speaking fan base on Twitter who has a problem with him, you know? So mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it has to do his confidence some good.
Yeah, probably at the end of the day, just because it's been so long and it's been a really hard road for him to get back to maybe what's now he's back to full health. And that goal maybe is just a confirmation. He's sealing up his rehab process from that broken foot, and he's ready to pick up where he left off. I really hope so. He's got the fourth most minutes on the team this year, so Gasperini definitely sees something with what he's doing.
I mean, to be honest with you, I wasn't surprised at the lineup, because you always put Hans Hotteboer if he's available in a Gasperini lineup. But I would have loved to see Brandon Sapi in this match.
I think him coming on maybe in the second half when it was kind of sealed up would have been nice. But I can understand not playing Sapi too, because as electric as he can be, I feel one time this year he's going to make a mistake that we're just going to be scratching our heads. It's going to cost us something. He's just too young right now still, and I think he has some growing to do still. But this felt like a Sapi game. Lecce is probably a Sapi game.
I honestly just feel like, you know, he had some great games. He had some real stinkers, which was, you know, like you said, you'll see in a young player. But I don't want him to get lost in the shuffle, because I feel like a player like Nadir Sortea is somebody that Gasperini will turn to, because it's almost like, you know, he's gonna give you that six performance in every single game, you know.
Yeah,
I would, and I like that Nadir Sortea grew up with us, and of course I like that he's Italian, but I don't want to lose Brandon Sapi.
Yeah, and what makes it more, when Zappacosta comes back, what happens to that as well? Does Zappacosta immediately leapfrog everybody to is it going to be Hans and Zappacosta? I don't know. And yeah, it's definitely something to consider. I hope not too. I would like to see Zappacosta be further down in the pecking order and not come back into the starting fold or the rotation fold.
So we're up 1-0. That goal from Hans Hotteboer comes in the 32nd minute. A couple minutes before halftime, there is a penalty. It was a handball, I believe. Right?
Shoulder ball, kind of, yeah.
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 And
bicep.
It seemed like a handball to me. I don't know if you call it harsh or not, but we called it, you know, Cope Miners comes and steps in to take it because Lucho is not there. And, you know, Vicario saves it because he shoots it right down the middle. Kind of sucks. We go in at the break 1-0. Second half, Adamola Lookman has a nice little solo play and puts it past Vicario 2-0. Around the 60th minute, so 59th minute. I think the best thing about this game, Nick, was for the next 20 minutes, we were searching for a third.
Yeah,
which 100%. Which I don't think we've done in a while.
And that's why maybe we're starting to revert back to some, not the full style of what we saw last year, but some sort of hybrid of everything, of further back defense, more space in the middle, go hunt for goals. Even when you have a comfortable lead. And Adamola Lookman did not come off till the 89th minute in this game. He kept the best offensive player on the pitch to help you try to get that goal. Didn't put Malinovsky in, didn't put Boga in to try to, who knows what, conserve minutes or whatnot. You just keep the guys on that you want, to that you think are going to get you the best chance of scoring.
Yeah, and, you know, Duvan and Ruslan came on as well. I know Jim City came on in the 55th minute, but then Ruslan and Duvan came on as well. And, you know, Duvan Zapata coming in for Rasmus Højlund.
He had a goal. But
yeah, he had a goal. It was just offside. A little offside. Two things, and then we'll probably go to our match rating so we don't go for 2 hours on this show, even though we're having a great time. Duvan coming on for Højlund. I don't know if you noticed this, but Højlund was pissed
when he got
replaced. I don't know if he was upset about something that happened, but I feel like he really wanted to play more. And I like that. I like that I thought he had a great game. I'm very high, like I said, on Rasmus Højlund, and I like him as a starter for us. I think he's good there. But I also like him coming off the bench. So I feel like he's the type of player that can adapt well. And I feel like every time I watch him, he gets better and better at doing everything. But there were a couple of times where even a guy as good as Tan Cup Miners did not see his runs and like behind. And he was very, very frustrated. He makes really smart runs. It's like we're not used to to forwards who don't either ask the ball to their feet or ask for the ball going down into the channel. So I think in order to really unleash him as a starter and not just somebody to come in and protect a lead or to get something, we have to be able to look for through balls and smart runs. And just, we don't have the creativity in midfield to do that unless Ruslan Malinovsky. So when he came on, and of course, there's a lot of rumors about him being unhappy, potentially leaving in January, but he played a couple of balls. And one of them was that goal that led to that offside goal that Zapata had, but he's playing a couple of those types of through balls. And I feel like Ruslan and Rasmus together might be a good combination.
Especially with Malinovsky playing quite far back when he came on. He was not in an attacking role, really, which I honestly kind of like.
Yes.
Yeah. I think if there's anybody who would look for those, and it would be Malinovsky. I agree. Coat miners maybe too, but that's what Malinovsky's always hunting for.
Cope wants to do it 60 meters, you know, and not and in the air much more than you know, which is interesting because Malinovsky is known for his booming shot, but he actually has quite a gentle touch on some of these passes.
For sure.
Excuse me. Yeah, when he needs to. So I think maybe that, you know, you talked about going up against Lecce. I think Malinovsky and Højlund and maybe, you know, Boga or something like that against a team like Lecce, especially if we get a good result against Napoli and, you know, some of the other results go our way of the people around us, like they did this past weekend, which was really, really nice. I think that's a time to experiment because I like that combination. And I think Højlund will score goals because we've seen the goals he scored are just like, you know, sliding into the back post, which he's good at, but we're missing all these smart runs that he's making through off the shoulder. So
yeah, we need our version of Kevin De Bruyne feeding Erling Haaland in a way.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nick, let's go through your match ratings really quickly and see who's our man of the match here.
Yeah, I'll go through them pretty quick. So all the defense, I gave a 7. Musso, Toloi, Demiral, Scalini. All got 7s. Good performance from all of them, I thought. Hotabor, 7.5. Good wing play, and of course, he gets his goal. 2 years and 1 month. That's the last time he scored against Lazio when we put 4 up against them right after the COVID season started again. Joachim Mele gave a 7. Pasalic, 7.5.
Yeah.
Assisted, I forget who he assisted. He assisted the Lookman goal, but that was all Lookman, I guess, at the end. So it was a really easy assist to earn. But I thought really, really well-rounded game from him. Ederson, 6.5. We talked about him being the weakest. He didn't play bad, just did not play. Wasn't as sterling as everybody else on the pitch, especially in the midfield. Caught Miners a 7. When he blasts balls in from the left, good things tend to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a throw-in, off throw-ins or him just streaking down, that's a really good spot for him to be in to find things to happen, which I like. Lookman, I gave a 7.5. Højlund, 6.5. I thought he played well. Didn't do enough, I think, to get into that 7 echelon, but still a good game from a teenager. And then Zapata, Jim City, substitutes, 6.5. Malinovsky, I gave a 6. Maybe could bump him up to a 6.5. And then Okoli and Sortea played like 2 minutes, 3 minutes, so no rating for them. And then, man, the match was tough. I think you could have given it to Hans Lookman or Pasalic. I ended up with Lookman because I thought him coming in the supplant on the left showed great versatility, and then that second goal was pretty much all him. It was a brilliant, brilliant take that he had.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, just Han scoring a goal, I would give him man of the match because, you know, Lookman, that's old thing, but Lookman has just been on fire for us. And I think that this was a good, I would have liked to see a couple more goals just because they were there, obviously. I think our XG was kind of exploded a little bit by the penalty and the missed penalty there, the difference.
Yeah.
But we definitely could have had four or five goals. And Empoli just really didn't have much at all.
They weren't up for it, it felt like. Yeah. Maybe with Parisi and Stojanovic, because they had just so much electricity.
Yeah.
Just running up and down offensively, defensively. Maybe that was it. But yeah. Or Atalanta was just so convincing, and they just were able to to put a vice grip on the entire match, which hopefully that's more the case than anything from Empoli's squad decisions.
Yep. Well, I definitely will take that result. Leaves us in second place, obviously, with Lazio dropping points, and Milan dropped points as well on the weekend. Is fantastic result for us. And upcoming this weekend, obviously, we have that match against Napoli, which we talked about at length. But also there's the Derby della Capitale, so Roma against Lazio. Somebody's going to drop points in that match. So, yeah, we get a good result this weekend.
There's another big match, too.
Derby della Capitale, Inter against Juve. Derby d'Italia.
Derby d'Italia and the Derby de Capitale. Yeah, big matches.
Yep. So it's a big weekend. I'll be on the plane on Saturday, Nick. Hopefully I get the internet. But before we close it off, I do want to give a shout out to our friends at Eintracht Frankfurt, because they made it to the knockout stages of the Champions League after being down 1-0 to a very game Sporting Lisbon, and they turned it around in the second half on a Daichi Kamada goal, was the game winner. So
my $10 bet for them to win Champions League lives on, and hopefully it is, and I can win like $2,000.
That's amazing. That's amazing, Nick. Ride that. So we'll see who they get drawn up against, but good luck with that. We definitely will see them in December for the Trofeo Bortolotti. Another friendly got announced. We'll be playing against Real Betis in Seville. So that's going to be that's a cool one.
That's cool. And AZ, I don't know.
And AZ, yeah. About that too. AZ Alkmaar. Yeah, absolutely. So Eintracht, AZ, and Real Betis. So those are some pretty cool friendlies during the World Cup break that we're going to have. Yep. I wonder if Papu's is going to be in Seville at that time, and we'll show up in the away end for the as an Atalanta fan, I doubt.
We'll show up on the right side of the away end.
Yeah. Well, if he shows up in a Betis jersey, we know that he really hates Atalanta.
Yep. Absolutely.
All right, Nick, do you have anything else before we close it up?
No. I was glad we got Joe on. I thought it was a really good intro to the Napoli game. We tend to not – It was a great switch, I think, because we tend to focus more on the review rather than the preview.
Yeah.
And it was a switch this time. I thought it was really good to get a really in-depth look at from the Napoli perspective of this match. So thanks to him again.
I wonder what the odds are of me getting it right, that it's two defenders who score in a 1-1 draw. Interesting. If Minjae Kim scores first in this match, I have some spidey senses. Yep. Mm-hmm. Anyways, all right, Nick, remind everybody where they can find you.
Yes, sir. So atalantapassioni.com. Game preview will be up soon, hopefully, so go check that out.
Yep. And of course you can find me at atalanta_vegas. Follow the pod at atalantapod, and you're listening to us, so you know where you can find us. Until next time, what's Atalanta sempre, ciao tifosi.
I guess. Vinci dai, non ti lasciamo mai, e forza la tanda, e forza la tanda, vinci dai, non ti lasciamo mai. E forza la tanda, e forza la tanda, vinci dai, non ti lasciamo mai, e forza la tanda, e forza la tanda, vinci dai, non ti lasciamo mai. Oh, 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 oh.